What is up? Welcome to another edition of, I guess it's the utilization report, even though there's not a lot of utilization at this point. But welcome to the show. My name is Marcus Grant, joined by Dwayne McFarland. Normally in this spot on this show, we are talking player utilization. But Dwayne, there are no more games to be played. And we pretty much saw how everybody was utilized on Sunday. But your thoughts first, I guess your thoughts on Super Bowl 58, your takeaways from it.
You know, pretty much like everyone else, a little bit of a slow first half. I had a family over, had my parents over, had my wife's parents over. Everybody was kind of dragging, you know, heading into halftime. Now, everybody here, they're all Mahomes fans because my son goes to Texas Tech. So Patrick Mahomes went to Texas Tech. So everybody's rooting for the Chiefs. And my dad just hates the 49ers. Because growing up, like, that was the rival, really, for
Understood.
The Cowboys. Yeah. NFC East was tough, but the 49ers were recognized as the true other gauntlet, right, that you needed to get past in the playoffs and in 92, 93, 94, 95. You know, so 94, 49ers got the best of it. My dad has never forgotten that one. You know, who was the pick six by? I don't even think it was Dion. It was someone else, I think.
Was it
Merton? It was against Michael Irvin on his patented hitch comeback route, and the cornerback just knew who it was, jumped the route, took it back. My dad's never forgotten that. So he hates the 49ers. So he was rooting for Mahomes, plus he doesn't like the 49ers. So all the rooting interests were there, but it was just kind of a slow first half. But then the second half really picked up. Obviously, we got the great game at the end and overtime. And, you know, look, it's Patrick Mahomes. What else can we say about it at this point, Marcus? But we will be talking about Rashee Rice and some of these other backs or some of these other players on the Chiefs in the top 150. So, yeah, not as much utilization. But who doesn't want to start talking about rankings for next year, Marcus? It's never too early.
It's never too early. I'm already in a couple of mock drafts. I haven't done any actual real drafts just yet, but doing some mock drafts. In fact, I saw your rankings come out, and I don't think we're talking about him here on this show, but I saw where you had Malik Nabers. It was right after I had just picked Malik Nabers, and it made me feel great about my selections. So there it is. Which, by the way, you can go to fantasylife.com. You can check out Dwayne's early top 150. Matthew Friedman has his early rankings out. There are consensus rankings as well, so you can compare and contrast if you are doing mock drafts, if you are doing some real drafts, if you're just one of those sickos like us who wants to just do a regular draft. You can kind of start to look at where some players are ranked here very early. Obviously, this will change as we get through free agency, as we get to the draft, and these rookies or these prospects become rookies with homes. All this stuff will change, but figured we would dive in here in mid-February, now that the NFL season is officially over and we turn our attention to draft season. So obviously quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. We'll go through a few of these. So let's start with quarterbacks because I think we sort of know who the top guys are in some order. You know, you're talking about Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and this guy, Jalen Hurts. I know the back half of the season was not great for the Eagles offense, Dwayne, but they got a new offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore. They still have plenty of talent, so I would think Jalen Hurts will continue to be one of the top quarterbacks off the board.
Yeah, I think this is one that we just kind of keep it simple, Marcus. You know, there's no need to get like overly, you know, oh, we got to dive into all these advanced stats. No, it's Jalen Hurts. 22.4 fantasy points per game last year, even though people were down on him because of like what you said at the end of the year. But he's been over 20. He's been at 21 points per game or higher in each of the last three seasons. Like, that's all you need to know, essentially. And knowing that we're going to have all three studs back, you know, you've got A.J. Brown, you've got Devonta Smith, and you've got a really good tight end in Dallas Goedert. So you're surrounded by the weapons, like you mentioned. And he's a dual threat quarterback. And it sounds like, based on what Travis Kelce's saying, that we may get another season out of Jason Kelce. So that would also keep the brotherly shove in play. Jalen Hurts is still going to score touchdowns even if Jason Kelce's gone. But I would rather have Jason Kelce. You know, so anytime you have a quarterback that could throw for 4,000 yards, rush for 500 plus, and could score 10 plus rushing touchdowns, like, it's just hard, you know, to not have them in your top two. And that's really where other people have him as well, Marcus. But what I've noticed is, like, over in early underdog drafts, quarterbacks are falling compared to last year. The top eight quarterbacks are going about 6 to 7 picks later than what they were last season. So when I look at Jalen Hurts, for me, like, I kind of like it, Marcus. Right now you can get him in the middle to late round 3. he's going after names like Rashad White, like after Isaiah Pacheco, going after Marvin Harrison Jr., who we'll talk about here in just a bit. I would take Jalen Hurts over all those. I have him in my ranks as a player you should be taking in round two of your fantasy draft.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, I think because we've seen now where the elite quarterbacks are coming off the board in round two. I will say in one mock draft I did, I was able to get him in the third, very thrilled with that. But I think, you know, you're going to see Allen, Hurts definitely coming off the board in the second round. Curious where, you know, does Lamar Jackson go ahead of Mahomes, what have you. But I think that's sort of it. Marvin Harrison Jr., that. Yeah, I can't wait till we get to that one, because that's, I think, going to be a really, really, really interesting one.
Yeah, I want your thoughts on that one, too, because like, I had to do like a pulse check, like on my sanity. we'll get to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep going with the quarterbacks, though. Anthony Richardson, it's a guy that we were all excited about. And the first few weeks of the season showed everybody why we were excited about Anthony Richardson. He was the rushing threat we thought he would be. We're still waiting to see how he will develop as a passer, but there were reasons to be optimistic. Sadly, he was injured early in the year. We didn't see him for the remainder of the season, but Dwayne, he gave us just enough of a taste, I think, for our excitement to continue into the new season.
Yeah, I mean, the sample size was definitely small, but he did what we expected him to in that sample size. So I think that's why we get so excited. And I was kind of surprised. I thought I would be higher than really everyone else whenever I ranked Anthony Richardson. And I was kind of thinking, man, this might be a tad aggressive, you know, but I was leaning into the fact that, well, 26% of the team's design rushing attempts in the two full games that he played, and he averaged 24.5 fantasy points in those two games. So I thought, well, that's really great, but it's a small sample. You might be a tad aggressive. I go over and check Underdog. No, that's right where he's going. People, they see it. They want the upside, so they're willing to take him. You can obviously get him later than the other quarterbacks that we just talked about, you know, with Jalen Hurts and Josh Allen, which is nice. But he's the one, Marcus. Like, if things click right for Anthony Richardson, he can be the guy that joins that group because he is so involved on the ground game. So I could see him eventually falling behind. I was real torn with the next guy, which is Joe Burrow. I'm like, am I really ranking Anthony Richardson ahead of Joe Burrow? Like, Joe Burrow, when he's healthy and he's playing, like, he's typically going to be a top 3-4 quarterback, but he doesn't have that ground game. He has to succeed through the air. He's more, and I don't mean this to sound bad for Joe Burrow, but he's more along the lines of like what a Kirk Cousins, some of these other guys that have to live by getting all their total through the air. Right. And so Richardson, even if he doesn't have a great passing season, we know that he could run for 800 to 1,000 yards, Marcus. Yeah. And that's just so hard to ignore. So I did go ahead and leave Richardson one spot ahead of Burrow. I would not blame anyone drafting, though, if they're like, Dwayne's an idiot, I'm taking Joe Burrow over Anthony Richardson. I would not knock you for that.
Well, here's the thing, though. I think certainly among us, you know, folks who do this, right, who study this and are drafting now, I have this fear that Richardson's going to have his ADP skyrocket just because everybody I talk to is so excited about him. And like, the general consensus is, well, Anthony Richardson's not going to get past me. The problem with that then is then you have people starting to reach a little bit early out of fear that Richardson's not going to be around when they want to draft him. So I feel like he's going to be one of those guys that is maybe an early riser whose ADP sort of comes back down when you get more of the casual fans drafting, you know, in August sort of thing. But I
agree. I think that one's a really interesting one. Cause I wonder how high could he climb? Cause the next guy up like an ADP right now and in my ranks is CJ Stroud. Could he overtake Stroud? I mean, possibly, because I think people will look at Stroud as being more, well, he's got to do it all through the air. He doesn't have what Richardson has on the ground. So I do think that one will be a very interesting one to kind of monitor.
Yeah, that's it. The Richardson-Stroud dynamic, I think, is going to be a fun one to watch over the next couple of months.
Great problem to have, man.
It is absolutely a great problem.
Influx of young, good quarterbacks that we can. And that's part of why I think quarterbacks are falling down the board, at least the early ones. Mm-hmm. It's because people are comfortable saying, well, I'll just wait for Stroud. I'll wait for Anthony Richardson. I'll wait for Brock Purdy.
Brock Purdy, right.
So it's like you've got these guys that, you know, it's not the normal old retreads that were like, who's quarterback 10 through 12? No, we've got these young guys coming in. And I think that's part of why some people are like, I'm not going to take Jalen Hurts in round two. I'm going to take, you know, whatever player you want to take there. And I'm going to wait. And I'm going to take a Stroud or a Richardson. And I think I can get my upside there.
Which I mean, interesting on a couple of levels. I mean, one, as you mentioned, I mean, we had those guys that you just sort of knew were going to be quarterbacks 9 through 13 or what have you. Like, you know, Matthew Stafford has been what I call the patron saint of the church of wait on a quarterback, right? That guy that you just know if you're going to wait on him, he's going to be there and he'll give you decent numbers. So I think it's good to sort of have some new blood there. I just think from a football standpoint, there are a lot of people asking questions about, you know, look, Tom Brady has retired. Aaron Rodgers is nearing the end of his career. We mean, you know, Drew Brees has gone. Who is going to be the next generation of quarterbacks to sort of step up and fill that gap? And I think so far, we've got a pretty encouraging group. So that's a lot.
Yeah, add Jordan Love to those guys we just talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. 100%. Kyler Murray. This time, I won't say this time last year, but I would say last, you know, June, July, there was a lot of talk about what the Cardinals are going to do with Kyler Murray. Everybody thinks they're going to be terrible. Do they hold him out? Do they tank for Caleb Williams? Kyler comes back, and look, even though the Cardinals didn't have a great record, they did play hard. They played well. And Kyler started to round more into form as we got to the end of the season. Dwayne, I think they still need some wide receiver help, but Kyler looks like he's back to being the Kyler that we knew before the injury.
Yeah, I love Kyler Murray this year, and I loved Kyler Murray 2 years ago, but it's for the same reasons, Marcus. We know that if you can run the ball, that's a huge cheat code for quarterbacks. Kyler Murray, still in his prime. You know, I know there are questions about him staying healthy. He's only missed, like, serious time once, but you have to deal with, is he going to miss a game here or there? Is he going to be questionable going in? And I think that kind of bothers fantasy managers. But when I look at Kyler Murray, I kind of think of, like, Moneyball. Right. It's like, you know, hey, Billy, here's this list of players. And either because they're too old or some bias or for some reason, people just don't like them anymore. Right. And for me, that's Kyler Murray. Like, you can count on one hand, Marcus, the guys that could throw for 5,000 yards and rush for 1,000. Mm-hmm. I know that's aggressive, but it could happen for Kyler Murray if he played a full season, especially if this team gets Marvin Harrison Jr. in the draft. We saw Trey McBride really come on at the end of the year. He's a tight end that we'll talk about later. Marquise Brown could leave, but they could bring him back. If they bring back Marquise Brown, they draft Marvin Harrison Jr., and you have Trey McBride, now suddenly you've got a really good core of wide receivers. You've got a quarterback that in the past, Marcus, the last time we saw Kyler Murray challenge for 4,000 yards, he finished just a little bit shy of that, and that was in 2020. He was the QB2 in all of fantasy, averaging 24.9 fantasy points per game. So I think you could argue that, well, Kyler Murray is maybe even the cheat code off of Anthony Richardson. You're getting this guy multiple rounds later and getting a similar profile. Now, he's not as big as Hurts, Richardson, and Josh Allen. So he's not going to score you as many rushing touchdowns, but he can still give you 6 to 7, and he has the upside for the yardage. So I do, but I also think that Kyler Murray has a better chance to throw for 5,000 yards than Anthony Richardson. You know, so I think, you know, there are these little trade-offs we have there, but I really love Kyler Murray right now. And I do think, I'm curious on your thoughts, that his ADP is going to move up if they draft Marvin Harrison. I think people will start to, and that's right now in mock drafts, it's the Patriots or it's the Cardinals. And consensus right now is Cardinals. Now, that things can change, but it makes a lot of sense for that to be the pick for Arizona.
No, 100% his ADP goes up if Marvin Harrison is the guy there. I mean, as much as people love MHJ, you know, you pair him with a guy like Kyler, I think you can't do anything but get excited about it. And the two teams you mentioned, I think for us in fantasy, we would much rather have him go to Arizona than New England, where we know who the quarterback is. We know it's a guy who can get him the ball. You put him in New England with so much change there, new head coach, new coordinators. And then the question of who the quarterback is, is it still Mac Jones? Is it somebody else? There are just so many question marks there that Marvin Harrison in the desert feels a lot safer to all of us if that were going to happen. So
yeah, I think the next guy we're talking about could be a Patriot, though.
Very well could be. I have seen him mocked there. That is Jaden Daniels, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. It seems like the top two quarterbacks off the board are going to be Caleb Williams and Drake May. I have seen people flip that order and have it May 1st and Williams 2nd, what have you. But regardless, Jaden Daniels seems to be locked in as the number three quarterback pretty much across the board. And this is a guy who I think his stock kept rising all throughout the season. I mean, I also saw a lot of video of him taking some pretty wicked hits, which is a thing he might want to avoid at the NFL level. But in terms of just his ability, there's a lot of reason to be excited about Daniels.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't know that much about him because I haven't started my rookie evaluation process. I'm working on free agents right now because obviously free agency comes before the draft. So right. We have an order of things here, Marcus, that we have to work on. But excited about Daniels in my first, you know, my initial view, just looking at the raw data, 94.5 rushing yards per game in his final season at LSU. Oh, 0.8, almost one touchdown per game, 0.8 rushing touchdowns per game on the ground. Oh, he wasn't too shabby through the air either. 318 passing yards and 3.3 passing touchdowns per game. So when you look at that, like, he's clearly got that profile we like. He's going to run the ball. You know, how good is he going to be as a passer at the next level? I think that's very hard to predict. NFL teams struggle to get it right, much less fantasy analysts. So I think it's up in the air how good of a passer he's going to be. But I'll tell you one thing, he's going to run. And because of that, that's going to make him more valuable than where he's currently going in draft. So I've got him as my QB 15. I think Matthew Friedman has him even maybe a couple of spots ahead of me right now. Friedman's been all over this as well, but it's just the cheat code. You know, if you notice all the quarterbacks we've talked about so far, besides Burrow, we've got Jaden Daniels runs the ball. Kyler Murray runs the ball. Anthony Richardson runs the ball. Jalen Hurts runs the ball. So these are all the guys that I'm seeing the most value right now, or where I'm the most ahead of consensus. And it's all because they can run.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of it. 22 rushing touchdowns, or 22 scrimmage touchdowns, I should say, in the last couple of years at LSU. And I know this because I have friends who went to Arizona State, who every time Jaden Daniels had a big game, they were lamenting in our text thread about why he couldn't do this when he was in Tempe and somehow found a way to do it when he got down to Baton Rouge. But very interested to see where he lands and if it's New England. What they put around him in terms of some help and skill position guys. Over to running backs, where Breece Hall still had a phenomenal season. Look, we know the storyline, obviously, was Aaron Rodgers tearing his Achilles four plays into the year. But nonetheless, Breece Hall continued to be a beast. And look, all things considered, I think people still think of him potentially as a first-round pick in fantasy. And if they do get some consistent quarterback play, how high do you think he can come off the board?
Yeah, he's going to be a first round pick. It's just a matter of how high is he going to be, to your point there, Marcus. I think he deserves to be the second back off the board after Christian McCaffrey, because he's the closest thing we have to CMC. This is a back that can handle the majority of the carries on the ground. And he's also a high end profile talent as a receiver. And if you go back, I did this research getting ready for the free agency stuff, but it really applies to all of fantasy football for running backs. I went back and I normalized for running backs getting similar amounts of carries per game, Marcus, on data all the way back to 2011. Yards per carry didn't matter. Explosive rushing plays kind of mattered. You know, missed tackles forced, all these things we talk about that talk about the talent profile of a running back. And to hit your very top echelon outcomes, those things are important. But overall, things that actually correlated to scoring more fantasy points, the number one factor was the running backs that were able to catch passes. So where we talk about, you know, for quarterbacks, the cheat code is running the ball. For running backs, the cheat code is also catching balls out of the backfield. And Breece Hall just measures out great in both of those areas. If you look at what he did after he took over the starting role, he had the starting role, but when he took over that lead role coming off the ACL, that started around week 5. That's whenever the Jets made that transition and said, okay, we're just going to let you be the lead dog now, Breece Hall. He handled 67% of the rushing attempts over that final 13 games of the year. He averaged 19.9 fantasy points per game, Marcus. So when I look at that, it's another one of these things. Just keep it simple. Going to be another year off the ACL. So I think we're going to get more of that explosive playmaking ability that unlocks that top echelon potential finish. If there's anyone that's going to outscore CMC this year, I do think that it's Breece Hall, but I think you talk about a big component of that, and that is that Aaron Rodgers does have to stay healthy, because if not, like, they just don't have the upside to score as many touchdowns. If you have Rodgers out there, even as a game manager, we know he's going to turn the ball over less. He's going to have a high touchdown to interception ratio, meaning lots of touchdowns, not very many picks. He's going to make defenses have to respect the rest of the field, not just load up the box. So I know there's just a lot of good things that come from having Aaron Rodgers under center. And right now he's going as the running back two, which is right where I've got him ranked. He goes in the middle of the first round. So if you're thinking you're going to get Breece Hall at the end of round one, or maybe in round two of your draft, sorry, like, you're probably not. Like, my guess is he's going to be a top 3 to 7, top pick, going between pick 3 and 8, probably in most fantasy drafts this next summer.
Yeah, I know one draft that I was in, he went, I believe, seventh. It was a CMC. Then you had a run of five running back or five wide receivers, rather. And then it was Breece Hall right seven, after that. Yeah. So I think that's going to be pretty consistent for him all summer long. By the way, you talk about the quarterback situation. I know you saw the, I'm sure you saw the quote from Woody Johnson about we need a backup quarterback because we didn't have one last year. So maybe that's something they address this offseason.
Good idea, Woody.
yeah, I think so.
Get you some Jacoby Brissett.
Get somebody, man. Just anybody that you don't need great. You just need competent, and they didn't even have really competent last year. Kyren Williams was outstanding. He was so good that he made Cam Akers expendable in Los Angeles. There's a lot of people excited about him. But, Dwayne, I think there's also a little bit of hesitancy, not so much about Kyren Williams, but about do the Rams bring somebody else in? So I feel like this is one that, depending on what happens in the next couple of months, this could fluctuate a little bit. Like, if nobody comes in, I think he goes up. If somebody does come in, he maybe stays flat or goes down a little bit.
Yeah, this one is the most scary ranking for me. I think of all the guys that I've got right now that I'm essentially projecting, you know, to go, I don't have him in round one. I've got him just outside of round one for Kyren, you know, as my number 13 player overall, but he's my running back five. But what scares me, Marcus, is what you just mentioned. Like, we heard the Rams all year say that we don't really want to give him this workload. They just didn't have anybody else. They had Ronnie Rivers. You know, they had Royce Freeman. I mean, true journeyman. So there was no one there to really challenge Kyren Williams. And I think Kyren Williams is still the lead back, even if they bring in someone else. And oh, by the way, just like we were talking about earlier, the number one predictor to scoring a lot of fantasy points the following season outside of yards and touchdowns, because really we want, what are the drivers of yards and touchdowns? Well, it's rushing attempts. And Kyren Williams dominated that, you know, last year. So if he can make it through the offseason clean, I can still see myself buying into Kyren as that early round two, late round one pick. But the other scary part of it for me, Marcus, is I went back and analyzed this and I just looked at, okay, let's look at running backs that didn't go in the first two rounds. So they don't have that draft capital that ties their team to them. That kind of gives those guys more chances. And then also look at guys that scored at least 20 fantasy points per game in their first two seasons. And here is your list. Devonta Freeman did it in year two at 21.8. You had David Johnson at 25.8 in year two. Alvin Kamara did it twice. 23.2 was his first one, though, in 2018. Then you had Kareem Hunt at 20.9. James Conner, 21.5. Kyren Williams, 21.4. All of these running backs were okay in the following years, but they never got back to that previous form except for Alvin Kamara. Now, on one hand, that's bad. But on the other hand, you're like, okay, so what? I'm getting a guy at the end of the first round or the beginning of the second round that's not going to score, you know, 21.4 points per game like Kyren did last year. You could live with 18, 16. Yeah. But the thing is, Freeman was the only one, Marcus, in the following season to get to at least 16 outside of Kamara. The rest of these guys all took big falls. Now, you could argue Kareem Hunt probably would have. His was off-the-field stuff. Yeah. And then he landed with the Browns, who had who? Nick Chubb. Right. So, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, but it's honestly, like, when you look at Kareem Hunt, it's admirable that he could even carve out what he did because he was having to battle with Nick Chubb. So you kind of got to throw that one out. But even once you do that, like, David Johnson was a major disappointment if you stuck with that. And then you look at James Conner. He was a disappointment. Now, he's turned around and been someone that's held value over time. But he's not a guy that you want to take at the end of round one. So I do have some hesitancy with Kyren Williams. More often than not, at that spot in the drafts I've done, I found myself, Marcus, just clicking on Garrett Wilson. Maybe that's wrong, but I feel like they probably are going to score similar amount of points. But I know Garrett Wilson's going to be on the field. He's going to be out there. And if Aaron Rodgers is with him, I have to worry about, you know, less about injuries with wide receivers and less about playing time. Running backs, we know, coaches get weird. They're like, you're my third down back. You're my 2-minute offense back. You're my back inside the 5-yard line. You're my back. You're my back between the 20. There's just, it gets kind of crazy with running backs. And I just have to worry about it less with Garrett Wilson. So I'm not saying I don't like Kyren Williams. I'm just saying he's the one that makes me the most queasy. It's like, you're kind of at the top of the roller coaster hill and you're like, oh God, here goes my stomach. Is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? I think Kyren can still be really good in fantasy, but I love to hear your thoughts because I'm a tad queasy at his current ADP.
Well, no, I mean, I think you're right. I think with when you talk about him versus Garrett Wilson, for instance, right? If the Jets go out and they add another wide receiver, it does not significantly impact what Garrett Wilson can be. The fact that he's going to be the target leader in this offense and he's going to get all of his opportunities. If the Rams go out and add another running back, that will directly impact Kyren, right? I mean, the Jets can go out with multiple wide receivers and still have some of those guys be good. There's generally going to only be one running back on the field at a time in an offense. So that has a much bigger impact there. And I think I go back to, you know, a few years ago when Sean McVay sort of said that they don't really ever plan to use a running back the way they used Todd Gurley back in the day as a true workhorse, that they sort of want to have multiple options there. It just turned out that this past year, Kyren was so good, it was hard to take him off the field. But I do think that if McVay has his way, he will find another guy just to sprinkle
far,
in there a little bit.
Marcus, do you think Kyren Williams falls if they take a running back in the first two rounds? I don't think we'll see a running back going round one of the draft this year, right? But I think round two could be in play, even round three. That those round two and three picks, you know, they typically get playing time. So how far do you think Kyren falls from his current ADP if the Rams take a back in round two or three?
I mean, I think he drops two rounds, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's at least a round, maybe two. I think people will get much more nervous about it. So if they don't take one in those first, you know, two rounds, the other thing is, I don't know that his ADP really moves up.
No.
Might it move up a couple of spots, a couple of picks? Yeah, but I think there's more downside here than upside on how much his ADP is going to move if you're someone that's just wanting to draft some teams early.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He may be going about at his ceiling right now, and so there may not be anywhere to go for him but down, unfortunately. Speaking of young guys who had phenomenal seasons, Devon Achane, and I mean, just it felt like every time he got his hands on the football, he was going 20-plus yards, probably longer than that, for a touchdown. He's another one where, you know, look, I know the Dolphins have an out potentially on Raheem Mostert's contract, but it, you know, after the season Mostert had, it's hard for me to believe that they would just walk away from him. Achane's probably going to start taking over a bigger workload there in Miami, but there's still the threat that Mostert's going to be there and make plays. That's the only real worry I have about Devon Achane right now.
Yeah, with Achane, it's just the ceiling potential here, because as much as efficiency and some of these other data points are not that sticky year over year, and they also don't correlate as highly to fantasy points, well, if you slice it another way, which is going and looking at historic seasons where running backs have just absolutely erupted, right, and just destroyed fantasy seasons and like made you the league champ just on taking them alone, those boxes are all typically checked. So when you just look at it from a ceiling standpoint, you look at Achane averaging 7.9 yards per carry last season, you know, 22% of his carries went for 10 plus yards. And you look at the offense they run and I'm like, you know, he's going to probably regress, but like how much? Like that's they're constantly creating these mismatches, creating, you know, confusion on the defense that allows a player with his speed just to, you know, get the angles he needs to get past that second level of the defense really quickly. So I think he's going to regress some, but I think he's still going to be a very explosive player. And then to your point, I do believe he still remains in a committee with Mostert because they've got a good contract and Mostert was really good last year. But I think Achane's role expands. And if for some reason he edges into the lead role, when I say lead role, like if he got half the carries, he'd probably be in the lead role for the team, right? Because you'd have, you know, Mostert close behind, you know, and then you'd probably have a third back, you know, in behind that, some other guy they're sprinkling in. So 45% of the rushing attempts could lead the team on the Dolphins. But I think there's a chance that Achane lands in that role, you know, if he's just playing so good that they can't keep him off the field. I also think that there's upside for him in the passing game, right? I think there's more of an opportunity to get him a little bit more involved there. He was good on a per route basis, but when you look at his skill set and the things that he's able to do, I think he could be a really mismatch, you know, in the passing game, probably at a different level than Mostert. So I think there's multiple outs here for Achane. He could get some more carries, but also get more involvement in the passing game. I could see a world where he's really the third highest targeted player next year outside of Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Like, I think that would be in the range of outcomes. So Achane is just a guy that, man, you're gonna want exposure to him. I have him as my running back 7. I've got him one spot ahead of Jonathan Taylor, even though I just told you guys that the biggest predictor to next year's success in fantasy is carries. And Jonathan Taylor has Achane beat in that category in spades. So maybe I'm an idiot. I've got him back to back. But again, I'm a sucker for a ceiling. I'm a sucker for a good ceiling, Marcus. And man, Achane, if for some reason Mostert went down. And I don't think they'd ever give him like 75% of the carries. But if he got to 60%, oh God. Like he would be, he'd probably be the running back one.
I mean, to quote the wise philosopher Michael Jordan, the ceiling is the roof. If Raheem Mostert went down at any point during the season. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of upside there. Just, you know, there's still a guy I think is going to be hanging around, and that's the only real concern that I've got with Achan. It was a frustrating year for the most part for Aaron Jones. He had nagging injuries. He just really couldn't get going till finally late in the season. It seems, to quote Matthew Berry, they decided to free Aaron Jones. He started to get loose, had the very good playoff game and a loss against the 49ers. And all signs point to him remaining in Green Bay. So now, Dwayne, can we just get the end of season Aaron Jones for a full season next year is the question.
Yeah, I think we could, you know, with Dylan, you know, I don't know how much Dylan's going to get. They might get him back on a min deal. I don't know that anybody's going to want AJ Dylan, unfortunately, for AJ Dylan. Sorry, bud. Not saying you can't ever be good, but it's not gone the way the Packers had hoped, right? Yeah. For what they spent on him in the draft. But with Aaron Jones, the big thing here is not just getting more rushing attempts. It's like he needs to get the passing downs. And I don't know, they might not do that. They might still give that to like a Patrick Taylor Jr., you know, or another guy like that. That's what I don't understand. Like, I really do feel like LaFleur is a very good head coach. He's a good schemer. But I don't get how they don't just let Aaron Jones play the passing downs, 24% targets per route run. Like, and he's just done this year after year after year after year. He's a high-end target earner when you get him out of the backfield. But if he landed in a role next year where he gets the primary passing down duties and got, you know, 55, 60% of the rushing attempts, he will be 30 years old. But I do think that we have a tendency as fantasy analysts to get overly worried about age. Now, the number of players, you know, as you get older, once you get past the age of 28, the number of running backs to reach 450 snaps, it does start to decrease, right? So, and that means if they played at least one snap that season, how likely were they to get to 450 snaps in that season? And like, once you get to that age 29, 30 bucket, Marcus, it drops off. So like age 27 to 28, 26% of the backs reach 450 snaps. Once you go to age 29 to 30, drops to 19%. Age 31 to 32, only 10% of the backs. But of the backs that do manage to remain relevant, right, and get and actually be able to play that amount of plays, their points per game are not that different from the young guys. 13.3 points per game for backs age 29 to 30 versus 14.2 for 27 to 28. Oh, let's look at the rookies, 21 to 22, 14.6 versus 13.3. So, yeah, we still want the younger guys, but a guy like Aaron Jones, and remember, the number one driver, once you normalize for the number of attempts a running back gets for scoring more points, is how many routes they run and how many targets they get. And that's why I'm talking about Aaron Jones in the passing game. If he suddenly showed up, which is a possibility, and had the passing game roll, he would be going way too late right now in fantasy drafts, even though he's at the age of 30. He is a guy that could still put up 20 fantasy points per game. He's going to come with increased risk of not being able to play all the games. That bears out in the data, and we've even seen it with Aaron Jones in recent years. But when he's out there, Marcus, like, I would not be surprised if people are like, oh my God, this is kind of like what we just saw with Raheem Mostert.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny, too, because over the course of his career, it just feels like there was always somebody sort of in his way, right? I mean, Jamal Williams was there for years and was taking some of those opportunities. Then it's been A.J. Dillon, some other guys. Then, as you mentioned, missed six games this past year just dealing with some nagging injuries. But when he is right, he is still one of the more productive backs in the league. And we'll see if he can kind of keep that going from the end of the season into next year with the Packers offense. Hey, what's up, basketball fans? The season is starting to heat up with bigger plays and even bigger wins. Today, we've teamed up with DraftKings, who have a brand new way to play daily fantasy sports with DraftKings Pick 6. All new customers get $50 in Pick 6 credits after playing just $5 in their first pick set. Get in on the action right now. Now, getting started is simple. You can download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and sign up using promo code DEBRIEF. Select 2 to 6 NBA players and choose if they're going to have more or less of a stat. Track your lineup and compete against others for a huge shot at huge cash prizes. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now. Sign up with the code DEBRIEF. New customers can get $50 in Pick 6 credits when they play just $5. That's code DEBRIEF only on DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours. All right, let's get on to the wide receivers. We continue our look at the early top 50, which, by the way, you can check out at fantasylife.com. Dwayne has his top 150 up. Matthew Friedman has his initial top 50. There are some consensus rankings as well. So head on over to Fantasy Life. Go check those out. By the way, you can still sign up for the newsletter. Yes, it is still coming to your inbox. I was reading it this morning as I was sipping on my coffee. So be sure to go check that out. But let's talk wide receivers, because Justin Jefferson is an interesting one, because the question around Justin Jefferson mostly is, will Kirk Cousins be back in Minnesota? Now, look, to his credit, JJ says, I'm going to still be great regardless of who's throwing the ball. But, you know, he did say, look, it'd be nice to have Kirk back there in Minnesota. How much of that question factored into where you have him ranked?
It's huge. He would be my number one wide receiver over CD Lamb if I knew for sure Kirk Cousins would be back. It's just that we just lived through it, Marcus. We saw what Zach Wilson did to Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson was on, well, he was going to have a top five fantasy wide receiver season. He might have been like a top two guy this past year, but because he had to deal with Zach Wilson and some of the other guys, didn't have Aaron Rodgers, it is a factor, especially when you're splitting hairs for these guys you're taking early in drafts right now. Like, let's think about it. Even if you wanted to argue with me with Kirk Cousins coming back that you'd rather take CeeDee Lamb or Tyreek Hill, you'd have an argument. So once it's like that, I'm like, okay, let's just try to de-risk it as much as we can. Let's take CeeDee Lamb first for now, take Tyreek Hill second, and then let's take Justin Jefferson third. Because if for some reason we don't have Kirk Cousins, it's going to be an issue if they can't replace him. Even if they made a trade and they decide, oh, we're going to go with Justin Fields, that's a downgrade from Kirk Cousins. I think you have new risk involved. You're probably, the offense is going to change. They're not going to throw the ball as much. So even if they get someone that's a name we like a Justin Fields, I think there's inherent risk that are involved. So it's just as simple as that. I don't know for sure about Kirk Cousins. So I think for now, you got to take the other two guys before him.
Yeah, I still think Jefferson still has a high potential to be great. But look, as you mentioned, we've seen the quarterback play does have so much to do with how productive the receivers are. So keep an eye on where Kirk Cousins lands and draft accordingly. We talked about Jalen Hurts and the fact that he's still going to be a top three quarterback off the board. And part of it is because he's got A.J. Brown, among others, to throw to. Look, A.J. Brown had that ridiculous stretch in the early part of the season, going over 120 yards for, what, six, seven games in a row, I think it was. Slowed down a little bit in the second half of the season, but he's still A.J. Brown, Dwayne. I don't think there's much really to argue about that. He's still a first-round pick. He's still a guy that has high potential this year.
Yeah, and when you go back and look at historical first-half splits, second-half splits, you know, for players, honestly, it's typically noise. They face tougher defenses. You know, they battled injuries. It's really, there's not any sort of strong signal. So, I mean, it's really only recency bias, like that would have people concerned about AJ Brown. And people aren't that concerned. They're still taking him, you know, late first round, early second round. So people still know AJ Brown's good, but it's another example of a player that I'm taking over Kyren Williams, you know, that a lot of other players are not. I also don't know that I'm forcing Puka Nacua, who we'll talk about in a second. I could see taking him, but like AJ Brown's just done this for so long, man. And a 30% target share is elite, period. But when you do it on a team with Devonta Smith and Dallas Goedert, that's just even more impressive. It is so hard to dominate like that on a team with those other targets. Look at that. Look, that's what's held back Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel from separating. But A.J. Brown was still able to do this. If it wasn't for that late season lull, which I think, honestly, we can point a lot to just how defense has finally figured out how to defend this team, just the constant simple RPO stuff that they're running over and over. Defense has wisened up to it after seeing it for 2 years. And now we get Kellen Moore. So we're going to get a more pass-friendly offense. This also applies to Jalen Hurts. You brought up more earlier, smartly. And this trickles down to A.J. Brown. They're going to run more passing plays. I'm not saying they're going to be the pass-heavy Chargers. I'm sure Nick Sirianni is going to reel that in. He's going to want to have a little bit of balance. But I'll tell you this, they're going to throw the ball more than they did last year. I can almost guarantee that. For the Eagles. So if you look at that, you're going to have more passing plays. We've got this elite player still absolutely, you know, in his prime. And I think you're going to have a less stagnant offense. Last year, the Eagles ranked 29th, Marcus, in percentage of plays that use pre-snap shifts and motion, 39%. But whenever you look at what Kellen Moore did, he ranked second in the NFL in that category. So I think we'll see some big changes here more movement at the line of scrimmage to get these guys in better matchups, already have them running full speed, like what you see with the 49ers, what you see with the Dolphins and the things that they do. I think some of those same things will be brought over to this Eagles offense. And so those are just little small edges that I think also help out AJ Brown. But the biggest factor here is AJ Brown. He's just a stud. He's one of the best 3 to 4 wide receivers in the NFL.
I mean, really, we can talk about all these different things. It really comes down to what you said. AJ Brown is just good at football. And that goes a long way toward being successful in fantasy. You also mentioned Puka Nacua, and he's another one that I'm not certain about what to do or where to take him. I've been in drafts where he's gone in the top 10, and I love Puka. I love what he did this past year. Cooper Kupp is still a thing, and hopefully Cooper Kupp can stay healthy for the entirety of the season. And it's just a little bit of like, okay, how much do teams start to take away Puka Nacua next year? I still love him as an early round pick. First round feels a little too rich for me right now.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with it in round one, Marcus, but like people are taking Nacua right now over AJ Brown. And I'm like, well, I've just got a better sample with AJ Brown. I know for sure that he is a stud. And you know, I've just seen him succeed in multiple, you know, environments. So I like taking AJ over Nacua, but I do think when we look at Nacua and his comps based on his rookie season, it's hard to not just want to take him in the first round. So he averaged 17.6 fantasy points per game last season. And that's despite having to battle with Cooper Kupp for targets. I do think there were plenty of games there where Cooper Kupp was injured. Obviously, at the first part of the season, those first four games, we didn't have Cooper Kupp on the field at all. But even when we had Cooper Kupp out there, his targets per route run, yards per route run, all those things were still strong for Nacua. And then if we look at a composite score that I like to create using yards per route run, Pro Football Focus receiving grade, got by the way, guys, it has a really strong signal, especially for rookies. And I know a lot of you want to trash on PFF and their grades, but you're gonna have to get yourself together and gain some composure because like the data actually shows that it has mattered. And then obviously targets, earning targets is the biggest part, right, of that. And when you put those three things together and you create this composite score, here are the guys that scored similar to Puka Nacua, drumroll please, Marcus, Odell Beckham Jr., Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Mike Evans, Tyreek Hill, AJ Brown. So wow. Look, stylistically, he's not the same as all those players, right? He has a different way that he plays. He's more of a possession receiver. You can move all over. You play him in the Z, you move him into the slot, but he can beat you downfield. He's not just an underneath dink and dunk guy. So I'm going Nacua in the first round. I have him as my wide receiver 7. That's one spot behind where he's already going over on Underdog. So he was another guy that I got through it. I'm like, oh man, like I'm gonna be really aggressive on Puka. And then I go over to Underdog and I see the ADP. I'm like, oh no, everybody's actually drafting him a spot ahead of where I'm drafting him. But I can see the reason why. My only, you know, really argument there is I'm probably just not doing it over AJ Brown, but I could see why you would. Right. I'm not necessarily against it. I'm just like, you know, when it's between those two, I'm probably going to take AJ Brown, but let's say I draft 150 teams, which I probably will because, you know, I'm a degenerate. At some point I'll just start taking Nacua first because I know if I want to get him, I got to take him there. But if I'm doing one fantasy draft, Marcus, I think I'm still leading to AJ Brown over Nacua. I don't know what your thoughts are.
No, I think so too, just because I think it comes down to, I think the Eagles are going to score more points. They're going to score more touchdowns than the Rams will this coming year. And so that means there's more potential touchdown upside for AJ Brown. And then I think the Kellen Moore factor does have something to do with it. In fact, I took AJ Brown a couple spots ahead of Puka Nacua in one of those mock drafts. So I'm right there with you on this one. Rashee Rice really made a name for himself as the season went along. The narrative went from the Chiefs don't have a number one wide receiver to Rashee Rice is the number one wide receiver there in Kansas City. Obviously did great in terms of sort of, you know, short intermediate throws and then yards after the catch. I'm wondering if he can add more of a downfield element to his game next year. But Dwayne, even with what he gave us this past year, there's a lot to be excited about with Rashee Rice.
Yeah, and just being transparent with Rashee Rice, he's another guy that I was concerned, am I being too aggressive with? And then I looked at ADP, and it was in line, so I'm like, okay, I'm not going to worry about it right now. I think there are a couple ways this goes. Well, first, let's just hit on what Rice did, as you mentioned. Like, he really came on down the stretch once he took over that full-time role, right, which started in week 14. And that's essentially when he got into seeing at least an 80% route participation in every game from there on, except week 16. He was close to it, though, right around 80, averaged 85% from there through the championship game. And he averaged 17.6 fantasy points per contest with a 25% target share. Yeah, you're probably saying, why'd you leave the Super Bowl out? Not intentionally. I just did this article before the Super Bowl, so I haven't gone back to update it. Obviously, those numbers would come down a little bit after the Super Bowl. And the Super Bowl uncovered the one concern I have. If he does face off against teams that really want to take him, they can do it right now based on what we've seen, because you just go play man coverage. If you play man coverage, you can't throw the screens unless it's perfectly blocked by the other receiver right away. Typically, the quarterback's going to go away from the screen play when he sees man, especially if it's press man coverage, and he's going to go to the backside to hit a slant route, another a man beater type of route, right? And so when you look at Rashee Rice, 28% of his targets came behind the line of scrimmage, Marcus. That was more than Deebo Samuel at 25%. And we've seen Deebo, when you get in games against man coverage, he tends to disappear. In the Super Bowl, he didn't disappear. They gave him his targets, but he couldn't get the catches. You know, McDuffie right. was just great game by McDuffie, by the way. Just putting the clamps on Deebo. And so that's my concern with Rashee Rice. Now, here's the good news. 70% of covers in the NFL is zone. So you just don't, you're not going to play man a lot. What happens is you play certain teams that are loaded at cornerback that will play you man a bunch for that game. And so you can have these blips where you're like, oh my God, where'd Rashee Rice go? He scored one fantasy point. Well, that's when they're going to come. Now, the good news is we have that data. So we can be looking ahead to the matchups where he's going to see a ton of man coverage versus the ones where he's going to see zone. So I think we can account for it. But even once I thought about all that, like I just looked at it. I'm like, okay, so let's go look at guys that had a similar issue in their rookie season or early in their career, even where they didn't have the super high ADOT. And so I went all the way back to 2011, Marcus, and here are the closest comps. Percy Harvin, who was great, except injuries derailed his career, and migraines. Migraines really hurt Percy yeah. Harvin. And then you have Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp, what did he do? He ended up turning into more than just a guy that you get the ball to around the line of scrimmage. And then the other one was Deebo Samuel. So I think that's kind of your range of outcomes. Like Deebo, yes, he has the up and downs, but you know the spikes are big. And if you look at the way Rashee Rice gets his points, it's pretty similar. I mean, they're two big yards after the catch guys. I think Deebo's better than Rashee Rice. I expect Rashee Rice to probably regress in the yards after catch department. But typically, guys that have a low ADOT, they're going to have a solid yards after the catch. And I do think Rashee Rice is a plus player in that area, and he's just in a great scheme with Patrick Mahomes. So they do a lot to design it and make sure that he can get a lot of yards after the catch. So, and the final thing, man, 85.1 is his rookie PFF receiving grade. That's elite. Essentially, wide receivers that get an 80-plus grade, they go on to be really good. So I have a little bit of concern about Rashee Rice, but I'm not overly concerned. I will be concerned depending on who they add in free agency or in the draft.
Yeah.
If it's a deep threat, I'm fine. A deep threat could actually help him, because then the opposing team can't just play all this man underneath coverage all the time against him. They've got to respect the deep ball because they know Patrick Mahomes will uncork it. So I would prefer to see the Chiefs add a good receiver that plays on the outside that can earn deep targets. I'm not talking DJ Chark or MVS. I'm talking about, I want to see them go a step up from that. And I would not be worried. Now, if they added, someone more in the mold of an intermediate chain mover, then I would be a little more concerned about Rashee Rice. I think that could cap his target share, and that could be a problem, and I would probably move him down the ranks.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, because they definitely are going to have to add some pass catchers there, whether it's free agency or the draft. I don't think they can stand pat on that. Yes, they won the Super Bowl, but that was a glaring deficiency in the offense this year, so I think they definitely make a move in that regard. Marvin Harrison Jr. probably not in the cards for the Chiefs because of where they're drafting. I imagine he will be long gone by the time. I imagine he will be long gone by the time the Chiefs are on the clock. He is going very early in a lot of mock drafts right now. I mean, look, Dwayne, he is the number one wide receiver prospect off the board, a guy who very well could go in the top three or four picks in the NFL draft. How do you feel about what his current ADP is, though?
So I was low on him, and when I looked at ADP, I went ahead and moved him up, but I didn't go all the way to where ADP is. This guy right now is going in fantasy drafts ahead of Josh Allen in the second round. That's how high he is now. It's gotten ridiculous at this point. Now, I understand why. I understand the thesis behind it, as people like to say these days. The thesis, don't lose the plot, is he's the closest thing we've seen to Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. And a lot of people, again, I have not done all my rookie analysis yet, but it will be coming out soon. People compare him to Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. And we know that rookie wide receivers can break out earlier than they ever have. And we saw Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase post high-end wide receiver one seasons as rookies. So that recency bias to those two players and how great of prospects they were. Now you get this next prospect that you can argue has had more hype than either of those ever had. Like, I can't remember, honestly. I cannot remember a player that's been hyped, that coming into the NFL, that's been hyped as long as Marvin Harrison Jr. The the closest comp I can think of, I honestly have to switch sports, is to go to a guy like LeBron. Now, LeBron was obviously huger, but I'm talking about from a very young age, you were hearing about this guy. And it never stopped. The drumbeat continued, and for good reason, because he performed. He performed at the collegiate level very well. So I think drafters are a tad aggressive. I'm not taking him over Josh Allen. There's just no, I don't need to. What am I accomplishing? I don't need to. I mean, even if I get it right, like, I don't know why I'm doing that. I know Josh Allen is great. I think Marvin Harrison, I'm very comfortable with him. You know, I've got him at wide receiver 15. That still feels aggressive. But I'm comfortable with him in the third round. Once you get to names, maybe you're looking at Keenan Allen and you're like, who we'll talk about in a minute. And you're like, well, I can take the young guy or I can take the old guy. Like, I get it. Like, you can do that. You get to him and Mike Evans. I don't know that you're right, but I could at least see the argument, right, of saying I'm going to go with the younger player than, you know, over the older player. Obviously, we got to see where a guy like Mike Evans lands. So, but I think before that, like when you're taking him over guys like Josh Allen, I think you're pressing your luck too much.
So you talk about the thesis there, and an interesting thesis I heard from, you know, I was talking with Bob Harris and Mike Dempsey at Football Diehards recently, and Mike Dempsey had it, love those guys. Mike Dempsey had an interesting theory that you're seeing Marvin Harrison Jr. and to some extent like Romo Dunze, Malik Nabers, these rookie wide receivers going really early in mock drafts or early drafts, because it's mostly people just planting a flag about how viable these guys are, and that maybe once we get to the draft and these guys have actual homes, we'll see some of this kind of normalize a little bit. But Mike really believes that right now we're just seeing people sort of, you know, early adopters or getting early on the gold rush here and trying to kind of stake a claim on some of these guys. And that's why you're seeing this really, really high ADP.
I think that's some of it, but because like now we've got this true market data, we've never had this ADP data where people are spending actual money to go draft a guy like Marvin Harrison this early. So it's not just analysts trying to plant a flag. It's the whole market. The whole market is looking at this and saying this guy could go early. But I do think like a slight tangent, but similar to what Dempsey's saying, is people are in dynasty mode, Marcus. Yeah. Like, look at Twitter right now. This is the time of year where the Twitter streets get flooded, and I love it, with dynasty content. These guys talking about all the prospects, and I do it too. We love it. And it's the fresh page turn to the new offseason. What's the newest thing we have? Rookies. We've got new guys, guys we've never talked about before. Let's get really excited about them. And so I do believe that because there's so much buzz around all the rookies, they get inflated. Because there's FOMO going on. Everybody's like, oh, I want to have. So it's similar, I think, to what Dempsey's saying. But I do think that the main point that you brought up is really holds true. Like once we get the landing spots, it's going to change things. If Marvin Harrison lands with the Cardinals, he's probably going to be a round two pick or an early round three pick. Mm-hmm. If Marvin Harrison lands, Marvin Harrison Jr., I gotta say it, because Marvin Harrison has already earned his skins on the wall. Yes. This is still junior, so we can't give him daddy's props yet. If he lands with the Patriots, I think he's going to move down from there. If he's with the Patriots, no one's taking him over Josh Allen. That's not happening.
No.
You know, if he lands, say somehow there's a trade, you know, and he lands with even something lesser than the Patriots. Like, I think those things will have an impact, and they'll have an even bigger impact for some of the other names you mentioned, Malik Nabers, Romeo Dunze, some of the other rookies.
Yeah. I just think so much right now is, and I think that the dynasty part is a good one too, because we always love the shiny new things, and there's a whole lot of shiny new things for us to play with in fantasy coming up in the very near future. You did mention briefly Keenan Allen, and another outstanding season for Keenan Allen. He was banged up near the end of it, missed some time, but 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns, 100 catches. It was another ho-hum. Yep, just Keenan Allen doing Keenan Allen things sort of season. That's the good. The questionable part, Dwayne, is that he's going to be 32 when the season starts next year. And he may not be a Charger anymore, depending on what happens this offseason. So how much does that factor in? Where do you see Keenan Allen at this point?
Yeah, those are all definitely factors. We know it's a team that's going to run the ball more. I don't know that they'll be as run heavy as the old Jim Harbaugh teams with the 49ers. They do have Justin Herbert, but we did see Harbaugh run the ball all the time in college. Even when we had a guy named Andrew Luck, he still ran the crap out of the ball. So it's a mentality for him. I can't tell you for sure by how much, but they are going to run the ball more. I think the guy that's at bigger risk for being cut here is Mike Williams. Mm-hmm. And just looking at his contract, looking at his injury history, looking at the outs they have on the contract, and just the fact that Jim Harbaugh's been very complimentary around Keenan Allen. He's not saying a word about Mike Williams. He's kind of tried to avoid it. So I feel like Mike Williams is a guy they're either going to try to move. I don't think they'll be able to with his contract, or they're going to end up having to cut him or get him to renegotiate his contract. So I feel like Keenan's probably back here. And if he's back in an offense that wants to run the ball more, but Mike Williams is now out of it, that kind of offsets, you know, the potential issue of running the ball more. So when I look at Keenan Allen, it's another one of those Moneyball things. You know, we get this idea in our head that we can perfectly predict when these wide receivers are going to fall off a cliff. And I think Adam Harstead has done some really great work over at Football Guys. He's put together these mortality tables. And essentially what his research showed is, look, these wide receivers continue being good until they're not. There is a percentage. He put some really cool percentages all in a table and everything for you of basically, you know, how much we typically, it's not a matter of how much these guys fall off, but the risk that they're just going to basically go from something to nothing. It's usually not gradual. It's just a cliff. It happens. You don't see it happening. There's no flashing sign. Keenan Allen's deteriorating. It's, oh God, Keenan Allen was good. Where'd he go? He's gone. He's like, he's in the bottom of the ravine. But predicting when it's going to happen, like, you can't. It's really hard to do. Like, there are some there's no leading indicators. They're obviously, the older they get, it does get a little bit more likely each year, right, that it's going to happen. But it's another one of these Moneyball things, in my opinion. I think Keenan Allen could end up being a cheat code in fantasy again this year, because drafters are, you know, they're pushing him down the board right now. Wide receiver 20 is where I have him. He's falling to wide receiver 24 right now over on Underdog. I mean, this guy averaged 21.1 fantasy points per game last year. You know, the number one indicator for wide receivers is their ability to earn targets. Keenan Allen is, as far as we've seen, still earning targets. 32% target share last season. The only guy that was higher was Tyreek Hill.
I mean, just continues to be steady. I mean, the biggest knock on him lately has just been the nagging injuries that seem to keep him out of a handful of games here and there. But when he's on the field, continues to be productive. And I say he's one of those guys that I think we sort of take for granted, because, as you mentioned, he falls down the board, and he gives you solid production, and it turns into, why didn't we draft Keenan Allen? So we'll see if he's
last
back
year
in LA or not.
The research I saw was actually the number one player that you could have drafted, that if you got him at his eight, you drafted him right where he was, obviously where he was going at his ADP. Mm-hmm. He was the most rostered player on teams that advanced to the playoffs. That's how big of a deal Keenan Allen was. Obviously, the injury hurt him at the end of the year, and I know part of that ties to age too, so it's a factor. But before that, like, if you had Keenan Allen, single-handedly, he was the most important player in fantasy last year as far as getting you into the fantasy playoffs.
Yeah, no, I 100% believe that based on what he did. Got a handful of tight ends to talk about. Travis Kelce continues to do Travis Kelce things. Even in a down year, I use air quotes, down year, he still finishes as the tight end too. I know there was some talk that maybe he rides off into the sunset if the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, why wouldn't you get the band back together and try to go for three in a row? It just seems to make sense. So is he still your tight end one, or has Sam Laporta surpassed him in that?
For now, look, I've put Sam Laporta. I had him really close, but I do respect, like, what the market is saying. And ADP right now, drafters are taking Laporta. It's not close, 14 spots ahead of Kelce.
Wow.
So with me having them in similar spots based on their target earning ability, all the things that matter for a tight end, I went ahead and went with the younger player. Am I confident right now, really, that Sam Laporta is going to outscore Travis Kelce? If someone came to me today and said, hey, you got to put your mortgage on the line next year, your life savings, essentially any monetary value you have right now in life, you've got to put it on the line. You have to pick Sam Laporta or Travis Kelce. Who's scoring more fantasy points? If you put it to me that way, I'll be honest, I would still take Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. I would still take him. Obviously, I want to know that he's playing, but I think he's gonna, because what he said in the Super Bowl, you know, post game, you know, speech, you know, he essentially said, "Hey, let's go for the three." So I feel like he's going to be back next year, but I'm fine taking Laporta a little bit ahead of him right now. But I do think that this is a cheat code right now. He should not be going 14 picks after Laporta. I mean, we're talking about a guy that if you're going to go do early drafts, what are you looking for? You should be looking for things that probably won't be there by the time we draft come, you know, August, September. Mm-hmm. I do not think, as long as Travis Kelce's playing, that you're going to be getting him in round four. He was going in round five even sometimes in our underdog drafts. I think that's corrected itself. But he won't be going 14 spots after Laporta. So if I'm drafting right now, like one of my main targets in round three and four of drafts is just grabbing Travis Kelce before he moves up in ADP.
So the big question now becomes, when we get to July and August, how many Swifties are going to start playing fantasy football for the first time?
I haven't thought about this.
And how much do they boost up Travis Kelce's ADP? Like,
all the Chiefs are going to go through the roof,
right?
Especially Kelce.
Right.
Oh man, yeah, that's actually, it's funny. You know, you say that jokingly, but it's probably going to have an impact, especially in home leagues. People that are just like for the first time going to play in a league with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would dare to guess there will be Swifties in every league.
100%.
You know,
100%.
Not every, obviously, demographic and stuff matters. You know, how many women versus men you have in the league versus how their ages and all that.
Right.
But you're talking about people, you're talking about leagues where they're taking new entrants. So I think we've kind of qualified it. But my guess is that leagues are new that are newly forming, like almost all of them will have Swifties in them.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think I know you're joking, but that's going to have an impact.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to bump them a little bit. You're going to get a lot of people who just, you know, look, they play fantasy football. They've heard all about this Travis Kelce guy. They're going to draft him and it's going to bump him up boards. I think no doubt when we get to like August or so. Other tight ends, Trey McBride. We've talked about Kyler Murray. We talked about the possibility of Marvin Harrison Jr. landing in Arizona. Through it all, Trey McBride has locked himself in as the number one tight end in this offense. And I think regardless of who they may add, he's still a top eight tight end, certainly maybe higher than that at this point.
Yeah, I think he's locked into the number one role as of right now. If they draft Marvin Harrison, I think those two will battle it out. But I'm more confident in Trey McBride right now than Hollywood Brown. And I'm not like a hater on Hollywood. Like, I think he's fine. But I think McBride's the number one target heading into next year right now for, the Cardinals. 14.8 fantasy points per game, Marcus, once he overtook like the full-time role. So he had an 86% route participation down the stretch from week 10 on, 28% target share in those games. That is freaking astronomical for a tight end. And here are his comps using a composite score similar to what I talked about for wide receivers, but looking at the things that matter most for tight ends. His comps for early career, Travis Kelce, the guy we just talked about, Rob Gronkowski, and Zach Ertz. So I don't really have a question here. Trey McBride's my tight end four. I think he was one of the massive, massive major values in early drafts. People have quickly come around on Trey McBride. So right now I believe he's going off the board tight end. Oh, wow. Actually, no, he's moved ahead of Mark Andrews now in underdog ADP. So I think those two guys are in a tier together. I'm fine taking either one of them. I don't know that I would push him ahead of Andrews, but I love Trey McBride.
Well, and it's also just nice because we're starting to add more tight ends. We're starting to get a little
more. We finally are.
It took forever.
We finally are. I know people say it every year. It's a deep class. It really is. It's deeper at tight end this year. Based legit, not just on guys landing somewhere and thinking, oh, he's got a chance. No, looking at the underlying things that really tell us a player's talented. I think we do have a deeper tight end class than what we've had in a long time. Maybe this might be the best I've seen it since I've been playing fantasy football, which has been a long time.
Yeah, no, it is. It's great. I mean, you know, you talk about the guys at the top, right? You mentioned Trey McBride. I know Dalton Kincaid had to sort of share with Dawson Knox, but a talented player, Sam Laporta. And then there's this guy, Brock Bowers, who just has been destroying the college ranks for the last 3 years. I am more curious to see where the hype train goes on him because people are less afraid of drafting young tight ends. And obviously after Sam Laporta as a rookie finishes as the tight end one, I think a lot of people are going to try to get in on a guy who is arguably the most talented tight end prospect we have seen in a very, very long time. What is the market saying early on Brock Bowers?
They're pretty aggressive. The way I handle Brock Bowers is I did some of my initial rookie research. Again, haven't done the full stuff, so I reserve the right to change my opinion here, but just looking at some of the initial things that I like to look at for tight ends, he grades out as a better prospect than Dalton Kincaid. So I just slotted him in right ahead of Kincaid for now. Now, landing spot's still going to matter. If he lands on a team that has a veteran tight end that's even just average to above average, it could really hold Brock Bowers down. And we saw that this year with Dalton Kincaid with Dawson Knox. And the games where those two played together, it was a problem for Dalton Kincaid. Is Dawson Knox a great fantasy tight end? No. Is Dalton Knox a good fantasy tight end? No. Was Dawson Knox good enough to keep Dalton Kincaid off the field when they were both available, which impacts fantasy scoring? Yes. Mm-hmm. And so with Bowers, I might be a tad aggressive here just because the fact that like a landing spot could really move him down. You know, this I might already be ranking him at what his ceiling can be, even at a good landing spot. But looking at the potential landing spots based on the teams going, the teams picking and the top 10 picks that need a tight end, I feel pretty good about the potential landing spots right now. So obviously things could change a little bit there. You know, trades could happen. He could fall down the board some, all that kind of stuff. But to your point, the main thing here, an elite tight end prospect. And the key to unlocking big fantasy seasons from rookies, they need to be talented. But I talked about this last offseason, and it was why I was so much higher on Sam Laporta than everyone else, is if they land on a team that doesn't have any sort of veteran presence, like Detroit, that can be really good. We saw it happen for Evan Engram with the Giants. He had a good rookie tight end season. And we also saw it happen with Kyle Pitts. So all those players were good prospects. They had good draft capital, and they landed on teams that literally had no tight ends to block them. The rookies that land on teams that have any sort of veteran presence, you have to be a little bit more leery with those. And if that happens to Bowers, I will move him down the ranks.
Yeah, but I just imagine the hype train is going to be pretty wild for Brock Bowers, certainly up through the NFL draft. And then if he goes, as you mentioned, to a team where he can get on the field right away, it's going to go just insane. Last one, Darren Waller. And it was a weird year for Waller. He was injured early. When he got to the Giants, he got on the field. They were having quarterback issues of their own. Daniel Jones gets hurt. They go through Tommy DeVito. So many different options. How are you looking at Darren Waller right now?
I just love the ADP right now, Marcus, because the underlying data, even though he's been injured, still tells us he's a talented player. He's still earning targets. He's still doing things that equate to, you know, top 12 tight end seasons for sure. Like he compares really well to guys that have finished in that 9-12 range. He actually compares better, but to your point, the tight end class is stronger. So I think the bar will be a little bit higher, but he's just another one of these players that's kind of, you know, that money ball mentality of where the bias of a guy being older is pushing guys way down the board. And I think it works for ADP. We've talked about, you know, Kyler Murray, not necessarily older, but people are kind of forgetting about him. You know, running back, we talked about Aaron Jones, you know, who will be 30. Then wide receiver, we talked about Keenan Allen. So really, Darren Waller is my guy at tight end. You don't have to take him early now. Like, I've got him as my tight end 15. But will I be surprised if Darren Waller's the tight end 9 next season? Not at all. Will I be surprised if he's a tight end 6 next season? Not at all. Like, I think he could get to that just because, like, when you look at his ability, 21% target share, 1.55 yards per route run, 73.1 PFF receiving grade. When the guy's on the field, he can still play. And right now he's going tight end 18 over on Underdog. So he's a guy that maybe the Giants want to move him, because if you look at the contract, like, everything I've read sounds like the Giants really want to have Waller back. They just want him healthy. But even if he gets moved, I think he's a good enough player that I'm fine taking a risk on him right now. And if he stays with the Giants, I won't be surprised if he leads their team in targets next year. He just needs to be lucky enough to stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who he will be 32 early next season, but also you figure early in his career, didn't really get on the field a whole lot, didn't play a ton his first couple years in Baltimore, missed a year, didn't play a lot when he first got to the Raiders. So maybe still some juice left for Darren Waller. Just a question of finding a fit in an offense with a quarterback that can actually get him the football consistently. Anyway, that's just a handful of the guys that are in Dwayne's top 150 early rankings list. You can find the whole thing over at fantasylife.com. Be sure to go check that out. Compare and contrast. Matthew Friedman's is up. There's consensus rankings up. So you can already start doing your research for any drafts that you may be doing or may be getting into in the very near future. So looking forward to seeing how this thing evolves as we go through the season. And so, what for you now? It's you're free agency centered at this point, aren't you?
Yeah, free agency, then I'll be working on running backs. And, you know, one thing we can say about this top 150 is it will for sure evolve, Marcus. This is just our starting point. We'll continue doing more research. That'll change things. Landing spots are going to change things. You know, competition, you know, on teams for touches and looks, you know, that's obviously a big factor here. But yeah, moving on to the free agents, I will have a very in-depth article on the running back free agency class coming out tomorrow. So you can find it over in the Fantasy Life newsletter. Make sure you're subscribed to that. You can also check it out on the website, fantasylife.com, for free. We'll be out the week after, but then coming back, like, I'm going to hit the wide receivers, then we'll hit the tight ends and quarterbacks. Then we'll be on to the rookies, Marcus. I'm already starting to study the data for the rookies as I'm writing up the free agents and get all the data together and kind of get my thought process going. But yeah, we're on our way. Free agency will be here before we know it. And then we'll be at the NFL draft. And you know how quickly this time goes.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this is the, you know, air quotes, off season has begun. Draft season.
Not really off season anymore.
It's not really an off season.
How much has that changed since when you first got into the industry? Oh, man,
like, when I first started doing this, I mean, literally fantasy was sort of a, like, July to January proposition. And, like, you know, maybe we pop up a little bit during free agency and we pop up again during the draft. But we were pretty much dormant and just getting ready for next year. But, yeah, no, the grind doesn't stop anymore. So, look, it's good and bad, man. Like, it keeps us doing this and it keeps us keeps us working, so that's totally cool. But yeah, it's definitely different than when I started many years ago. So anyway, that's a good spot for us to take a break, at least for this week. So we thank you for hanging out with us here on the show. As Dwayne said, be sure to go to fantasylife.com, sign up for the newsletter, all that good stuff. In the meantime, for Dwayne, I am Marcus. Thank you for hanging out with us here on the Utilization Report. I don't know what we're calling this now. Either way,
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy the week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again real soon.